call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now. 615-844-5600.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you. Zach Williams making sure everything runs great. Give you a quick score update. The first of two NFL games. This one kicked off just after 4. But Kansas City, after trailing early 3-0 to Buffalo, scores a touchdown. Travis Kelce with a touchdown reception from Patrick Mahomes. 2:44 remaining in the first quarter. It's Kansas City 7, Buffalo 3. A chance right now to go back to the hotline. Ryan Callahan, he covers the Tennessee Vols and the SEC for GoVols247.com. Ryan, thank you for joining us today, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
All right, first things first, a lot of speculation after Saturday. There's 4 quarterbacks that could see playing time. 3 of them got action on Saturday against Kentucky. One of those, not Brian Maurer, and then immediately social media blowing up that he's going to be entering the transfer portal. It looks like he's put that to rest. Is that indeed going to be the case? Because he basically sent out a statement saying that he is not going to leave his teammates midway through a season.
Yeah, he shot that down pretty quickly on social media, and right now there's no sign of that changing. You know, I don't have any reason to think he's likely to leave midseason. Now certainly this situation, the uncertainty Tennessee has at quarterback right now, you know, obviously anybody could be in the mix for playing time if things continue, especially the way they did Saturday. So anybody who doesn't get playing time now certainly might reassess things after the season. So we'll see how this plays out. But I think right now he's, by all indications at least, staying put, and wouldn't expect that to change right now.
I mean, here's the thing. If we were talking about September, he makes that decision, then whether or not he clears and able to play immediately or not, even if not, he would have been able to play at the end of September, say, next year. But now we're talking about, you know, it's October 19th, a different scenario. So if he's not given the waiver work to play immediately, it's going to be now 2022, for example. So because of that, it doesn't make a lot of sense anyway.
Remember, a one-time transfer exception quite possibly on the way next year that would – potentially make any transfer eligible to play right away. So that's yet another reason, really no need to have any sense of urgency to leave right now if you were considering that move as a quarterback, because if the NCAA passes that legislation next year as expected, anybody could be free to go anywhere next year. So he can sort of wait things out right now and sort of assess the situation, and then still always have the option of going somewhere next year.
Those two words, as expected, you know, I never buy into that anymore because, you know, just as expected, Cade Mays should have been starting playing, being able to play week one, and that wasn't the case. So nothing shocks me anymore with the way rules are thrown around. All right, so what was your we go back to Jarrett Garantano. You know, look, throw the pick six. You know, you're taught, you know, put it behind you, forget about it, and move forward. You know, the back-to-back pick sixes, that certainly did not help matters against Kentucky. But I even brought this up last week. You know, the fact that two teams that play each other every year, every other year at the other team's home site, you know, they're just something not right in the sports world. Because all those years, Kentucky wasn't bad. Now, they had some bad luck. But the bottom line is that Kentucky had not beat Tennessee in Knoxville since 1984. Law of averages, especially when we talk about, like even last year, a game that was decided with just over a minute to go with the goal line stand after Kentucky jumped up 13-0 and lost 17-13. You know, law of averages tell you that Kentucky's going to eventually win in Knoxville, and that's exactly what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, and in recent years, you know, Tennessee had flirted with losing to them in Knoxville at some points anyway. I remember back in 2004, I think it was, they had Tennessee on the ropes against a pretty good Tennessee team that played for the SEC title that year, and Tennessee almost lost and had to come back late to win that one. So it's one that over the past 15 to 20 years, there had at least been some closer calls. But let's face it, for most of that run, Tennessee's had the better team. They've had more talent. Kentucky wasn't good for a lot of that stretch, but the last 12 years or so, Kentucky's really, really closed the gap and made it a much more competitive series. They'd at least won a couple times in Lexington since 2011, and now they get over the hump in Knoxville. It's a game that we always knew was dangerous for Tennessee. I think people always kind of, it was one of those games that, especially in Knoxville, people were kind of looking at it in a lot of cases like, I'll believe it when I see it. Now that it's happened, I think it's certainly one that's going to have Tennessee's attention much more going forward. I don't know if they overlooked them. I don't think that really mattered in this case. It just was not a good game for Tennessee in really any way. So a lot of things for Tennessee to address. And obviously it's been kind of a rough 48 hours for the Tennessee program in general, with just everything that's happened coming out of that game and just where that's kind of left things going forward with a game against number 2 Alabama coming up Saturday.
Yeah, we go back to the overlooking, and if that was indeed the case, then there's something wrong from the – that's a coaching issue. Because – and look, it was set up that way, knowing Georgia previously, no show in the second half against the Bulldogs, Alabama looming this week. But, you know, Tennessee is not at that point where they can overlook anyone. So if that was indeed the case and the players weren't pumped up, ready to go, that's on the coaches.
Yeah, and nothing we've heard so far leads me to believe that was a major issue for this team. Now, I will say, anytime you're going on the road, I think you always are happy to have a noon kickoff. You know, I think it's a lot easier for teams to be flat as a home favorite, especially for a noon kickoff. So that always could come into play somewhat. But Tennessee's had a noon kickoff already this year. It wasn't like that was anything they had to adjust to, really. But that can take the air out of the game a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, Tennessee had multiple wake-up calls in that game. If motivation was an issue, you know, they had every reason to get up off the mat at some point and start playing, and they just couldn't. And that to me is the biggest concern for Tennessee going forward, coming out of that game, is you had, sure, the quarterback play is going to get a lot of the attention. You know, Jarrett Garantano is going to get a lot of the criticism coming out of that game, and fair. He had 2 pick sixes. That was a huge deal in the game. But even then, down 17-7 to start the second half, they had every opportunity to get back in the game. A lot of people thought they were going to win that game still, but the way they finished the half, finally putting together a scoring drive, I think people still thought Tennessee was the better team. In the second half, Kentucky just kind of manhandled them on both sides of the ball. Tennessee didn't get a first down in the second half until Harrison Bailey came in for the final drive of the game in garbage time and threw a 24-yard pass to Malachi Wideman down the sideline. So they did nothing all that well in the second half, and that was in a game that was still competitive coming out of halftime. So that lots to be concerned about. But to me, I just saw a team that frankly didn't look all that good, certainly didn't look any better than Kentucky talent-wise, I didn't think. I think that's a team that still just doesn't have enough difference makers maybe on either side of the ball. And that's concerning, that when they really needed to mount a charge coming out of halftime, they just kind of came up empty and didn't fight back at all in the second half.
All right, explain to me what happened with Jimmy Brumbaugh being let go. I mean, co-defensive coordinator, defensive line coach. He worked for 3 years with Derek Ainslie, the defensive coordinator, when they were at Kentucky. How can this go wrong after 4 games?
That's a great question. I think one interesting aspect of this, and this was touched on today, was that this is a year where Jimmy Brumbaugh only got 2 spring practices with his defensive line. So I think
right.
Some things that maybe you maybe could have had more time for him to work with his players this spring. Maybe you sort through some differences in philosophy or personality differences a little earlier in a normal year, but because this staff didn't get to spend as much time around each other in the spring and summer, because he didn't spend as much time with his players during the spring, you know, all that stuff maybe got pushed back a little bit, and things that could have gotten sorted out in the offseason end up sort of surfacing during preseason practice and the season. So I think there were some concerns about this arrangement before this weekend, certainly. You know, there were some concerns there, some differences in style and philosophy, as Jeremy Pruitt said today, that maybe needed to be addressed, and maybe they could tell even before this weekend that it just wasn't going to work out long term. But you just, you know, you stick it out because usually you don't make an in-season change. But I think when you have a game like Saturday, you know, clearly something must have gone wrong coming out of that game. I don't think this is something based on strictly performance. I would be very surprised to hear, and nothing what I've heard so far suggests it was just a performance deal. I don't think you make this move. You know, it's a 2-2 team with 6 games to play. I mean, there's a lot to be decided about this season still. no matter how disappointed Jeremy Pruitt is in his defensive line. This leaves him with a shorthanded full-time coaching staff for the rest of the year. He's got to coach the defensive line the rest of the way. This is not an ideal situation. So this screams to me that this game Saturday sort of allowed some things to boil to the surface that just couldn't be addressed to go forward, and it's you're left with sort of a mess to clean up, because the issues are not, you shouldn't have to deal with this mid-season. You know, normally this kind of thing happens. You deal with it, and you get through the season, and everybody parts ways at the end of the year if that's how it has to go. This year, obviously, Jeremy Pruitt decided he couldn't do that with this situation, and that's it's a tough one for Tennessee, but I've not seen one of these. Usually when it's a mid-season coaching change, it's because of a repeated pattern of poor performance that you just can't ignore anymore, and I don't think Tennessee's defensive line was quite to that point, so I think there was more to it than that.
Well, this tells me it's still a first-time head coach learning how to let go that he's not the defensive coordinator. He's not just a defensive-minded coach. He's a head coach. It also, I mean, look, you've had Derek Ainsley there. He's in his third year. You bring in somebody for 1 year, and he also gets the title of co-defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody had to be on the same page with this, or there was going to be a problem. None of that makes sense to me.
No, and we had heard, Jeremy Pruitt had made multiple comments publicly, really being pretty critical of his defensive line going back to preseason camp, and that was a little bit unusual, we thought, even at the time, a little bit harsher than you often hear him discussing different position groups. So it was a very public call out during camp, and it's not been as bad since the season started, but after Saturday's game, again, he was pretty pointed about that group not being physical enough, not dominating at the line of scrimmage, and that was a concern for him. But I just think, issues that you have that tend to not be as much of an issue when you're winning or when things are going okay become a much bigger thing when things go wrong, obviously. And I think this is a case where some issue that was maybe there beneath the surface became a source of contention maybe coming out of Saturday's game, and it just maybe got to a point where they just decided that it wasn't going to be a fit anymore. Hard to say for sure why it went that way, but I think there were clearly some concerns that just became a more pressing issue this weekend, and that can happen sometimes in a tumultuous season or coming out of a tough loss like that.
Well, obviously we had talked about the fact that he was always praising the backups and not the starters or the projected starters on that defensive front. The other part makes me wonder just how much was Tennessee able to get done as far as, especially the players on their own, in the involuntary workouts, as far as physically getting ready for this season. And that's not necessarily on your defensive line coach.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges that come with this year. I think that is, you mentioned that. That's one of the interesting things about this. Tennessee's defensive line was maybe least affected among the different position groups on the team,
right,
by all the COVID-19 quarantines they've had throughout the roster during the preseason and since the season started. They've not had many issues with the defensive line, so I think there's a sense that group maybe has fewer excuses to be struggling a little bit. And again, look, I don't think this is just a performance thing. I would be very surprised to find out if that was the case, because I just think they're, when you look at the issues Tennessee has on its roster right now, I'm sure fans would agree that defensive line is not at the top of the list. It's an issue. Don't get me wrong. They need to play better there, and that group has regressed a bit since last year. When they overachieved, I would say, last year under Tracy Rocker, the former defensive line coach, and this year they've taken a step back for whatever reason with a handful of seniors playing a lot for them. So it's a weird deal, but I don't think this is just a performance thing. I think sometimes you just don't know how you're going to work with people until you get them on your staff, and this is a guy that Jeremy Pruitt had not worked with in the past. You mentioned he worked with Derek Ainsley at Kentucky. Ainsley, obviously the defensive coordinator, wanted to work with him and spoke highly of him, and maybe this wasn't a fit with the head coach. Sometimes that happens, and you find out the hard way, and when times get tough, you decide it's not going to work anymore.
Did he take responsibility, Jeremy Pruitt? Did he take responsibility where the team is right now?
He's repeatedly done that. Yeah, he's been the anti Butch Jones, I would say, in that regard. When they've had some bad losses, even in kind of pointing to some mistakes that potentially could be perceived as him throwing blame at other people, he'll stop often and say, You know, that's completely on me. I'm the head coach. It stops with me. It starts with me.
Well, that's exactly why I was asking, because this decision sounds like he's throwing somebody under the bus.
Well, so that's the thing. I think it could be perceived as, you know, I think that's the initial inclination, is for people to say, hey, is he just looking for a scapegoat here to you know, make things look better coming out of a bad loss? And I don't think that's the case. I don't think that was if you were doing that, to me, you would make a change on offense. That's where Tennessee's most glaring problems were Saturday, not so much on defense. And I don't think he was looking for a sacrificial lamb or anything like that. I think this is just a case where, you know, maybe two people just aren't on the same page, aren't working very well together, and they just decided it was not going to work out, you know, even sooner than expected. You know, again, these things often are sorted out in the off season. You know, professionals decide to let it be for a while, and they do what they need to do to get through the season, and you get to the off season and deal with it then. I clearly things got to a point where they couldn't be resolved, and they decided to move on. But I don't think you don't get the impression from the optics of this that performance alone was the factor. So I don't know that it was throwing someone under the bus as much as just two people reaching an impasse and sort of having to work together day to day, and maybe just not being on the same page in a number of ways.
All right. Appreciate you as always. Let people know what they can expect when they go to GoVols247.com.
Yeah, tons of coverage this week, obviously breaking down all of this and the staff changes and how that's going to affect Tennessee going forward, recruit reaction to that, and lots more, breaking down the quarterback situation. All of that as we look forward to Saturday's game against Alabama. Check it all out, GoVols247.com, and sign up today, 2 months for $1 to get VIP access to the site right now.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Johnny.